Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Wednesday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by old friend Will Leach, who actually cross-promoted my podcast, this very podcast, several years ago, back when Will could travel to sporting events with his, I think his parents were in the hotel room, if I recall correctly. I was back in Atlanta. Like, it, everything was different. We didn't know what we had at that time, Will Leach.
Yeah, I think it was the All-Star game in Miami.
I think
that's what it was. Yeah, and that was quite a bit of time ago, to say the very least. But now, you know, listen, my thank you for having me. The lots of dinners, but you're still killing it. I'm still right. I think it was the old Sports on Earth podcast.
Yes.
But I'm still making a bunch of stuff all over the place, and my parents have been vaccinated, and my dad is going to the Big Ten tournament this weekend, which he has earned. So you know, my parents moved to Georgia. They had the whole idea that, like, they'd be closer to their grandkids. My children are their only two grandkids. Be closer to their grandkids after they retire and then just go travel the world and get to do all the things they never got to do while working 60, 70 hours a week for 40 years. And they literally got into their house, and then all of a sudden everyone said, oh, you can't leave your house for the next year. So the pandemic was poorly timed for them. So now that they are vaccinated, I am encouraging my father to go watch some basketball and watch a pretty great Illini team.
Well, we'll get to the Illini and just how good this team is and how incredible of a run this year has been and how much you've enjoyed watching Illinois basketball. Because let me check my notes here. You have not enjoyed watching Illinois football all that much over the last 40 plus years. Is that correct, Will?
Well, you know, I mean, there have not been – it's relative joy, right? Like, you can, if you really have gone through a lot of pain, you can talk yourself into the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl if you absolutely have to. You can really – you can get yourself up to it if you need to. I think I actually have a program and a hat from that game, and I didn't even go. So that is how desperate you are for Illinois football. But, yeah, Illinois basketball – you know, Illinois football, anything you get, you're happy about. But Illinois basketball has always had a little bit of a dynasty. Like, we consider ourselves – what's the old Fitzgerald line? That everyone, the poor in America, considers themselves temporarily inconvenienced millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's how Illinois basketball fans have felt for the last 15 years. Oh, we're not
I
good
think you
now.
You also describe the Republican voting base that way as well.
What's that?
I think you could describe the Republican voting base that way as well. Yeah,
well, you know what? There's more crossover than I'd like to admit between a lot of Central Illinois basketball fans and that voting base.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, don't forget, folks, you can check out all the episodes of the Chase Holmes Podcast on Blue Wire by going to Blue Wire Pods today, or just going to ChaseThomasPodcast.com and supporting the show by becoming a Patreon member by going to Patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Will, what have you found yourself reading and watching a lot of over the last week?
You know, it's funny, and I wrote about a little bit of this as well, but to me, this is a fascinating time in kind of American and human history, because, you know, there in about a month, or if not earlier, that everyone's that's going to want a vaccine is going to want to get one. Mm. The weather is gorgeous. I'm in Athens, Georgia. It is gorgeous right now.
70 degrees right now in Knoxville. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm desperate to go to like a beer garden or like a packed sporting event. And I'm so close, but I'm not quite there. Like millions and millions of people are not able to do it yet. And so there's this weird point of like, it feels like we're about out of this, but not quite, but yet you don't want to rush it. And yet also we've all spent the last year being mad at each other and mad about everything. And it feels like there's maybe some reasons to not be so angry and maybe to actually kind of appreciate stuff. And it feels like the Atlantic had this great piece of like, be prepared for a truly wonderful summer. Mm-hmm. And I know that. And it's close, but it's not here yet. So it's this weird like amalgam of things where everyone is about to be excited, but still scared, but also wants to be happy, but still annoyed by everything. It's a weird kind of crazy time. And I do wonder if it's going to explode in like orgies in the street this summer. So it is a pretty fascinating kind of period. So I think
I saw on the Post, they had a piece about – it was either the Post or the Times that remember how everyone just assumed that baby numbers would skyrocket?
Yeah.
It actually went the other way?
Yeah, nobody humping. Nobody's humping.
It went the other way, which I thought was funny. Well, we're going to talk about the vaccine and the FOMO related to that. Your new book – that I'm excited to read, because I can actually turn around right now, Will, and I can see God Save the Fan on one bookshelf, and I can see Are We Winning on the other. So that's pretty cool. A little bit of Illinois basketball and March Madness being just around the corner, and then the return to normalcy in sports this summer, which I know you're excited about. Firstly, though, you write a lot at Medium now, and you wrote a piece about vaccine FOMO, and I think it's real, and I was surprised at certain, like, you don't know what your reflexes are until you're put in a position where it's like, whoa, what is that instinct? Where did that come from? Mm-hmm. And when I heard someone who is a mutual acquaintance, I guess is the best way to describe it, who is just an avid runner, super healthy, in their 30s, got the vaccine, and I heard about it, and I was like, there's no way that they're what? They work at like AT&T. There's no way. They're in telecom. How did they jump the like no pre-existing conditions or anything? And they talked to like somebody, they knew somebody who would call them when they had some vaccines that were about to expire, and they just shot over there in a few minutes and got it. And I was like, huh. And then I read your piece, and I didn't know about this website that you could actually go and do this. So now I'm logged in, and I did the code this afternoon before we got started. So.
And I've been staring at my phone since. I'm just realizing I left my phone upstairs to do this podcast. I know I'm going to get that text while I'm doing this podcast.
Well, I apologize.
Yeah, so if I die, it's your fault.
That's fair. So it's real. Like, what have you found yourself? Like, do you know anyone personally that you first were like, how did they jump the line? What happened here? Do you know anybody like that right now?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I certainly know people that I'm like, but that doesn't mean, but I think what's clear, and this is what I try to get across in the piece, that does not mean that they're doing something wrong. And I think that's what we need to separate from this. You know, the fear of missing out for the vaccine, I think, is an obviously very real thing. We've all seen it. You know, we've all seen that our friends have put up a picture of themselves getting their vaccine selfie, which, funny, in any other context, selfies, I'm not a big selfie person myself. I'm old. It seems like you should be better looking than me, I think, to be able to do selfies in a lot of ways. But like, these are healthy selfies. These are good selfies. This is for the public good to show that vaccines are safe and effective. So I see why people do it. It's, and they even have selfie stations at a lot of these vaccination places, and it's good. It's no question good. But there is, it's fine. I like the way you put that. The idea that you didn't realize, oh, where did that instinct come from? It's the same way that every time I'm watching a sporting event, if going into it, I don't know who I'm rooting for, by halftime, I always do. Like, it's just like my body tells me, oh, I hate Michigan. I guess I do. I didn't know that, but now I know that just by watching this game. And it feels that way a little bit when you see these, you're like, oh, wait, I'm actually a little pettier than I thought I was. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all kind of like that a little bit. So I'm trying to combat that a little bit with the idea of, you know, the bad guys are not the order of the line. In fact, I think you've seen kind of statistically the states that put a ton of restrictions and really enforce the idea that, like, if you anyone that tries to jump the line or gets a vaccine, however they would do it, anyone who tries to do that is gone. And like we're gonna take away vaccines from that doctor's office or that Walgreens or whatever, and we're gonna punish them. Those are the states that are doing the worst job vaccinating their populations. And
did you see that Alaska open it up to everybody now?
And it's funny, and to me that is that I feel like Alaska is unique in that they have a lot of rural areas, and they've got people that obviously I think are only available by like 15 dogs taking you there. So I think that
I
understand it.
If
for
Balto
Alaska,
has to bring you to the vaccine, then you deserve it.
Right. But listen, I don't think most of the country's ready to do that yet, but I think that they are closer than we realize. And I think that's the right instinct is to try to get as many people as possible. The bad guy is not the person that's getting the shot when you're not sure if they should have or not. The bad guy is COVID. And that's what we're trying to get rid of. So sure, I would love to get a vaccine. At this point, I will confess, I live in Georgia, so I know a lot of people who have been vaccinated. I know a lot of people who have had it, depending your viewpoint on how long immunity lasts. I find myself one of the few people left that has had neither. So are you certain, though? I've got my antibody test. Okay. I have not had it. I've got my antibody test, and I give blood. I encourage everyone, by the way, this is a great excuse to give blood. Give blood every 3 months; they will give you a free antibody test. I encourage everybody to do that. Anyway,
I'm very bad about that. Will, I remember in undergrad there was a blood it freaked me out that there was like this. I called it the blood bus that would always drive around campus and park by the library, and it was almost like it was so judgmental to me. Like, I was going to study, and I was like, I'm doing a good thing. I'm going to be a good studious student. And I would walk past the nurses at the blood van, and they would always look at me like, you want to give blood? You can get a cookie or something. And I was like, no, I did not have that on my agenda today. I'm going to study some geology right now. That's where I'm walking to right now. And I always felt bad because, like, I am not a blood person, Will. Like, I will faint. Like, I am not good about it. I used to talk my way out of getting my finger pricked when I was in middle school. Like, don't want to do it. I don't like it. And I don't know. I've always felt guilty about that.
Well, don't feel guilty. It's just that people have surely died because you did not get blood. So, don't feel guilty about it. It's fine. I don't want you to feel queasy. So, not just kidding. So I feel like, you know, that is. I certainly am eager to get the vaccine, and I have my certain ethical lines. I know some people, as I wrote in the piece, some people have gone to other states. I know there's a pharmacy here in Athens that does a little wink wink thing for if you're not eligible, but they'll give you a call and you come in on Tuesday and we'll take care of you. And just remember me when I'm trying to get a car dealership or trying to get a deal on a new car or something. I know there's people that do that. I know some people have said they're a caregiver when they're not necessarily a caregiver. And on one hand, I think our instinct, particularly after the last year in which all we've done is just shame everyone for everything all day because we're all trapped in our houses and just yelling at getting all of our anxiety and fears out through the computer. I understand that our instinct is just to be like, how could they do that? But like, listen, we are almost at the end of this. This is the way out of this. To me, there are tons of vaccines coming very, very soon. This is about to speed up really fast. I think we're going to put ourselves in a kind of a silly situation to be spend all of this energy getting mad. Why don't I have my vaccine? Why does that person have a vaccine? When in a lot of ways, I think we're all going to – anyone that wants it anyway is all going to have it here pretty soon. So I encourage everyone to just don't sweat it. I see it in the replies of every post when someone has that selfie where it's like, good for you. I'm glad you got it. And then you just know they're going, must be nice.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like that's – and I get it. I get it. We've all kind of been that defensive crouch for a year now. But I do think this is good that people are getting vaccines. Even if it's not you yet, it will be you soon. And so I feel like encouraging people to just hang in there. We've made it this far. We're almost there. Save yourself the aggravation.
Are you at all surprised that pro sports leagues have not just jumped the line? Like, maybe my cynicism played a role in this, but I was stunned, and I'm still kind of stunned, that it's taken this long for leagues to just mass vaccinate their players. Like, I'm still really stunned, and I understand that there's unions and that this is more complicated than that, but I just assumed, like, I had penciled in that this was going to be a problem for Sports League and Silver and Manfred that they were going to have to deal with, because they were going to try and jump the line in the best interest of the fans at home, of like, do you want your best player playing this spring never getting pulled for COVID tracing? This is what we got to do. They got to jump the line. But that did not happen, and still has not happened yet. Were you at all surprised by that?
You know, I wasn't actually. And the reason I remember when that talk kind of happened, and one of the reasons I wasn't was because, I mean, to be honest, kind of a cynical reason, but like, I think owners care a lot more about getting fans in the stands and paying customers vaccinated than they do their players. I think that, like, at a certain level, if we've learned anything from the last year, it's that the individual availability of the players in a particular sport is important to the owners, but just making sure that games happen is a lot more important. And so, like, I think that sure, it looks better if you know they're going to go see LeBron today, but it's much more important, and much more important to their bottom line, that you get fans in the stands. And I think that the inconvenience, and to me, that's the idea too. You know, if the players union even gave them like a hint of, we don't want you doing that, there's no reason then to push it. Because at that point, like, you know, the players union, if anyone, that you think they would be the one that would want to jump to the front line. But actually, you're seeing that not happening from the players union. I think that they are very wary, understandably, of saying, wait, why can a league mandate us to get any sort of shot at all? The military is not doing that, for crying out loud. So, like, you know, I think the idea... I think if they got any pushback on that, it's in their best. I'm sure that deep down they'd love to just rub a magic wand and have everybody no longer be able to get COVID. Which, by the way, vaccine people that are skeptical of the vaccine, that's what a vaccine does. It is a magic wand that makes you not get COVID. So I think they would love to be able to do that, but it doesn't seem. When I look at potential issues for these sports leagues, running out of players. Or not having their stars play as much as they'd like, or I mean, we've already seen that on-field transmission is not very common, if common, if it's happening at all. I think if that were the case, if we see a ton of on-field or on-court transmission, maybe they'd have pushed it. But they're not really seeing it that much. They've shown, for crying out loud, I still feel like it is very underconsidered, the fact that Major League Baseball had 2 months without a positive test. That is insane that they would go 2 months in the right in the thick of everything, for crying out loud. And they went 2 months without a positive test. Now, obviously, the Justin Turner thing was quite a streak ender, to say the least. But certainly 2 months without a positive test is, I'm sorry, it's a big deal. B, it definitely threw right in the face of the owners and MLB's arguments that they should postpone the season. Like, players were like, we literally just did 2 months when things were a lot worse than they are now to be able to do it. Why can't we start? And I think they were justified that. In three, I think it shows that you can do it, and you can do it without having to jump the line.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Do you think the country is healing over the last 90 days? Well, do you think things are improving?
I think things are two different things. I think things are better. I think things are better. We don't have to go down the political rabbit hole here, but I mean, like, it turns out that having a raging lunatic as president who has absolutely no idea and no desire to make the massive public health crisis that's killing thousands of people a day any better, getting rid of that guy helps. It, like, totally does. It totally does. It helps.
I think just getting him off Twitter is the biggest one. I think that's almost bigger, just not having that in people's minds every day. Like, just waking up and reading
it. I think that's a huge deal. No question. I think it's a huge deal. But I don't think we're healing yet. I think that there is going to be, you know, it's like any trauma. You know, I think there's going to be we're not out of the trauma. Even if you are vaccinated, even if you're my dad going to a game, I don't think my dad or a lot of vaccinated people feel like, sweet, everything's back to normal now. Like, it's not. We still have, like, we're not done with this. There are still thousands of people dying every day. Like, this is hardly over to any stretch of the imagination. Do I think that we're in a better place, or do we think we've moved closer to where we can start thinking about healing? Yeah, I think we're closer. I think we're better off. We are better off in many, many ways, not all just Trump related. I think we are a lot better off. But I think what's going to happen is, you know, you're going to see. The next thing that's going to happen is everyone that wants a vaccine can get one, gets one, then we're all going to start getting mad at people that don't get them. And that's going to be the next thing that we get frustrated by. And then there's going to be a little bit of a tiny surge that goes up at some point, and we're going to blame it on the non-vaccinated people. And we're going to yell at them about that. Well, you know, there's a lot of muscle memory about what we've gone through in the last year and how we've treated each other. The idea that, I mean, my kids are about to go back to school, but I think by September, the likelihood is that we'll have a school year much more similar to a normal school year come next September.
Oh, the SEC is opening up, Will. SEC country. It's open.
I know colleges. Colleges are that way.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think, like, grade schools and high schools are going to be close to normal next year. But that's great, except now, you know, now I know the mother of that kid that's a friend of my son's never wears a mask in the grocery store and puts up QAnon links on Facebook. That's something I know now about them. It's going to take a long time for us to get to heal from this massive divisive trauma that we've gone through. But do I think things are better? I don't think there's any question things are better, but this is going to be a long process.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your children and putting them back to school, parenting the pandemic, what have you learned about yourself as a parent over the last year? What is the biggest thing you've learned?
As a parent, I've learned that, kids just need to be around other kids. I don't think like adults need to be around other adults. Clearly, as you see the way that a lot of people have been acting over the last year, but I mean, it is, I understand. Opening up schools is a complicated question with a lot of variables. And I'm always – another thing I've learned in general about this pandemic is I'm immediately suspicious of anyone who is sanctimonious about anything, because everyone is constantly being proven wrong every 20 minutes. And so anyone that claims they have the answer – and I think that a lot of this is just kind of a – online social media pose. I just don't believe that most of the people who are braying all day on social media are sitting up in their bed at night, looking up the ceiling and thinking, wow, I am certain about everything and I got everything right today. Like, I just don't think they're doing that. I think it's all just like a fake thing that everyone's pretending to be certain of themselves. You know, one of the worst things that's really happened in the internet in the social media age, it has flattened humanity. It's made people that actually are complex, nuanced, fascinating people, and it's made them into absolutists on everything.
Yeah.
And so that is a very frustrating thing to watch happen on every side. And I think schools are a great example of this. And for me, you know, I understand that this is a complex thing and a lot of variables that have had to be weighed. I don't see how the short and long term health of these kids is not the most important thing for everyone. And so to see what high schoolers have gone through, you know, I have a third grader and a first grader, and you know, fortunately they have each other, and fortunately they have parents that can give them wireless all day, can in our home all day and give them attention. But, it's not, Like they're different kids that they are. You know, I think one of the things I learned during this as a parent was, you know, I can sit for a year and I ain't missing much. You know, this is not me. Like, I'm not like straight out of college and trying to start in the working world. I'm not like a high school kid or about, I know, I'm not like, I'm an adult. I've had my fun.
But also, like, what we do for a living doesn't really require. Like, that was exactly something I thought about, too, where it was just the pandemic. If sports were not canceled during this, my life would not have been all that different.
Exactly. And so, what's the difference about the year that I'm 44 than the year that I'm 37? Like, not a dramatic difference. But, like, a year when you're seven is everything.
Yeah.
And so I think that like adults had this idea that kids were supposed to pause like they were. And that's just not how childhood works. And I think we are going to be unwinding and unraveling the damage that we've done to kids for decades to come. I am already prepared for 10 years from now, the generation COVID stories about how all these kids fell behind. And I understand. I do understand. This is complicated. And it's I'm sorry, literally school is supposed to be about the kids. And the idea that particularly when all the science pointed, like, it's been very frustrating to have spent the first half of this pandemic screaming at Trump and their people, being like, how are you not looking at the obvious science here? And then the second half yelling at people, they're saying school should stay closed, when like every single scientific study said that they were safer than being out in the community.
Yeah.
So, you know, that has been a frustrating thing to kind of deal with as a parent. I'm very fortunate. My kids are close enough in age and they get along very well. They're very different kids, but at the beginning of the pandemic, they were buddies, but not like, you know, they were still like older brother and little brother. Now they've been together for a year. I mean, they are best friends. I imagine someday at their wedding or whatever big event they have in their lives, like someone making a toast and always pointing to this time as the time that they became like truly best friends. And that is exciting. And like, I feel like that's a good thing that came out of it. And it was an exciting thing to watch that happen. But yeah, I just think these things are so much bigger than I think we get caught up in the day-to-day fights of the moment and miss the larger picture.
What is the weirdest thing you found yourself doing in the last year?
You know, I will say that like I've gone through – I feel like I've gone through like two midlife crises in the middle of this, which is to say I went through my heavy – they were all minor ones, but they just happened like packed together. Mm. Like at first, of course, like a lot of people, I just started like, oh, I'm an alcoholic now. Like that just has happened in like the first 2 months of this. So I started drinking, but then I was like, okay, can't do this forever. This is not like a freezing time. Time is not frozen. I still need to like get my act together and get my life going. So then I started running like insane. So I've been like the way that you watch your Facebook, your all the people you partied with in college and after college go from like, oh wow, they're a little out of control. Oh, they've taken up running. Good for them. Oh, and then and just I feel like that happened to me during the pandemic. I just kind of went through the stages of health. But I will say one thing that has been nice that I feel very fortunate as just professionally. I mean, you're right. There was a lot of time where there was no sports. And I was I would have been very fortunate to be able to not only stay busy during that time and stay employed during that time, but I would argue I said early on in this, people would come to me like, Will, how are you gonna get through this but there's no sports? I'm like, I'm sorry, if I write about sports professionally and I can't find stories to write about in how sports handles the biggest public health crisis in 100 years, I probably should not be a sports writer. Like there's just so many stories to be able to write about and so many angles on it. I've said this before, but like I think you can make a pretty strong argument that one of the major figures to get sports back going was Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia. I don't want to give him credit for it. I think he was being reckless about it. But what really – the first crack in the door for the NBA was when Georgia – remember, Georgia was the first state, much to my displeasure at the time, to start – remember, they opened up bowling alleys and salons, and it was a whole deal. Everyone thought they were insane. Well, another thing that they opened were gyms. And so the Atlanta Hawks immediately went to Adam Silver and said, hey, listen, if gyms are open down here, but you won't let us open our practice facilities, understandably, but our players are just going to go practice somewhere in town and it's going to be a lot less safe than our practice facilities. Can we open our practice facilities? Nate Silver may have also had something to do with this. Adam Silver said, yes, you can. And from that, the next step was, hey, Florida might be – the Miami Heat might be able to practice. And, hey, Orlando's open during this time. And, like, that little tiny thing cracked the door open to everything. That was the first time that even the notion of starting to maybe we should bring sports back at some point this year even started to be kind of discussed. So that, to me, is a fascinating story. And if I'm just waiting to be like, well, I got to write about, like, how that guy made the big shot to win the game, or I don't know what to write about, I feel like I'm not doing much as a sports writer. So I've been very fortunate to and very lucky and very happy to learn that I can keep myself pretty busy in things other than just games going on.
Well, you also have a book, Will Leach, coming out very, very soon. Tell us about this book.
You know, the book is called How Lucky. It is a novel. It has actually nothing – I wouldn't say it has nothing to do with sports. It takes place in Athens, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And it takes place during a football game week. So there's some tailgating there, I'm always hesitant to say too many plot details about the book, but it's a novel about a man named Daniel who has a physical impairment and kind of his story he discovers something, he witnesses something happening, and he has to figure out whether he witnessed what he saw he witnessed, and if it was, how he can help the people that may have been involved in that incident. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the book. It's kind of a mystery, but I think it's more, I want the book is meant to be, it's kind of one of the things I've discovered about myself in the last, probably in the post Deadspin era of me, I'm actually like a relentlessly positive person. It's very annoying to be entirely honest. I think that we kind of get so caught up in our own worries and our own aggrievements and our own frustrations that, like, things are great. Like, things are wonderful. Nothing is perfect. Nothing is even slightly perfect. But, like, I wanted to write something that hopefully would help people, put a little positive things into the world, and kind of help everybody appreciate that life is good. I know that sounds kind of hokey, but I hope the book is hopefully funny and hopefully is not. But that's the idea. That's what I was trying to put into the world with the book. But it comes out in May. We got a great book from Richard freaking Russo from Empire Falls and Nobody's Fool, and Kevin Wilson, who wrote Nothing to See Here and The Family Fang. They both loved it. We've got some nice reviews. But it's out May 11th. If you're following me on, I generally am bad at Twitter, but I have rededicated my Twitter to helping write this book, because this is a book that I did not even I wrote my agent. I haven't written a book in 10 years, and my agent didn't even know I was working on this until I met him pre-pandemic for dinner in New York, and I said, oh yeah, by the way, I have this, and just handed it. And he's like, it was a big dramatic moment. He's like, yeah, great. Now I have to carry this thing all around New York City the rest of the night. I was like, sorry, I have an email. Okay, I have it on file. I'll send it to you. It's not like if I lost it in the cab, it'd be gone forever. But it's funny, but hopefully it'll kind of make people feel better about the world. That's the goal of it.
What was a difference from writing this one versus writing God Save the Fan and Are We Winning?
This one did not have to be any connect, to be entirely honest, this didn't have to have any connection to the being the guy that started Deadspin, which has been for the first portion of my career, I was just starving and unemployed. But the second part of the section of my career is always going to be dominated by Deadspin. That's fine. I'm proud. It's a shame that Deadspin died and no longer updates. I'm certainly proud of the work that I was able to do there, and the people after me did there, and then the people that left Deadspin when it died and no longer updated, when they went over to Defector, I think the work they're doing there is really great too. And so I'm proud of being a part of Deadspin and being the founder of Deadspin. I'm proud of kind of the imprint it's had in the world. But people are crazy online, and so at a certain level, one of the reasons I left Deadspin was I wasn't really interested in being online take guy. Like, that was not the goal of why I got into writing in the first place. I don't think that's what Deadspin was when I ran it. And so, and as you kind of saw kind of the sports online commentary culture go in that sort of direction, and that kind of relentlessly argumentative, pump up the brand, even if it's stuff that you don't believe. That's just the opposite of what I like about the world, let alone the internet. And so I love writing about sports. I'm very lucky that being the guy that founded Deadspin has given me the opportunity to this day write a lot of things that I would have never had the opportunity without Deadspin. I'm very grateful about that. But I do think because of that, for a long time, there were certain things I was expected to do. And I love God Save the Fan. God Save the Fan, I like. I love Are We Winning. I'm very happy with how Are We Winning turned out. God Save the Fan, it's definitely my – you know who's a big deal in sports is going to be a big deal moving forward? Gilbert Arenas. That didn't age very well. So, there's a lot of stuff from that I might take back. But I do think that there was a certain idea that, I needed to continue to be the Deadspin person and continue – not to be the Deadspin person, but to be give people what they kind of expected from the guy that had started Deadspin. Now I think it's been enough time and there's enough other stuff going on that I don't have to do that anymore. And so to me, to write something that was very off brand was very freeing, and to have it be picked up by people and that don't care about sports and don't know anything about Deadspin is very satisfying. I'm going to pause for a moment and tell these boys to be quiet. Hey guys, boys, I'm still on the podcast. You have to be quiet. Okay. Are you staying inside? Boys, are you staying inside? Okay, that's okay. You can cool off. Just be quiet. Okay, there we go. They go back to school on Monday. They go back to school on Monday.
Okay, go ahead. You're okay with me leaving that in. That's great.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. It's fine.
That's part of the pandemic parenting experience. That's interesting, man, because I think what you had was Sports on Earth, and I read Sports on Earth every day, and you kind of, in between the what you're doing now with New York Magazine and everything versus the Deadspin era, because I didn't really read you at Deadspin. I that wasn't on my radar. Deadspin was a little bit before my time when it was at peak Deadspin, so I started reading you through Sports on Earth, Will, and that kind of thing, and getting your books and just being like, oh, this is interesting. That was my site. That's what I wish we got more of. And I was thinking about that today because I don't know if you're like this, where we have so many different sports things we have to read. While also, I think it's part of your duty as an American citizen to not necessarily debate politics online unhealthy all day or just get in arguments with strangers all day. It's just to read the Times, read the Post, keep up with what's going on, keep up with what you're voting for, and keep up with who the candidates are, that kind of thing. That's a lot of hours in the day. So I have this spreadsheet that I have, my Google sheet that I have, my daily reading list, and it's organized by politics, organized by movie reviews, organized by NBA, college football, college basketball, all the different things. But what I notice is I just dwindle more and more each year, it seems like, where I'm cross that one off. All right, remember when I read Sporting News? That's gone. Remember when I read SI for a brief period and now it's back, which fingers crossed stays on for a while. Remember when I read this and that, CBS, I and NBA was a great thing that I read with Zach Harper and Matt Moran all the time, and now they're gone. And I don't know, I just go up and down, but Sports on Earth was one of my staples every day. And I mean, Grantland, obviously, but that's kind of my dream is writing with my own site and building my own thing with this podcast and everything. Is all I really want to do is just write about sports every day and also work with a bunch of other smart people. And I think that's what you kind of had at Sports on Earth, where it's just oh, that's the kind of thing I want to do. That's pretty simple. It's just here's a thoughtful piece on sport X, and then here's another person who has a thoughtful piece on sport Y, and that's just all it was every day. And I was that's cool, that's all I want. What if we just did a subscription model for that? I don't know, that I just wanted to pick your brain on that for a second.
Yeah, you know, and I think that one of the things I liked about Sports North, and Sports North, it went on, it obviously had several permutations, always kind of based on whoever happened to be owning it at that time. But I think at its peak, I think it was a good combination between it took the best parts of quote unquote traditional old school sports writing and used it, merged it with David Roth and and crazy and all sorts of crazy stuff that that you were able to publish at the time, and that the best of the internet in a lot of ways. I think it existed during that specific time where before we transferred out of both of those. And so I'm a subscriber to The Athletic. I like The Athletic. There's a lot of people whose work I love at The Athletic. Athletic, sometimes I do worry the Athletic is a little too, well, we're just trying to recreate a newspaper from 2002 a little bit. And not everybody does that. There's a lot of really good writers there, but it does feel like institutionally they are more dedicated to the traditional old beat reporter newspaper model, which are important. I'm not saying those things aren't important, but you know, it doesn't, they never feel, not never, but the thing I liked about Sports on Earth when it was really kicking was it was a mix of those things. And it was, and you would take risks and you would, you know, I remember Tomas Rios writing a piece that was entirely fictional. And it was just weird and not everyone was going to get it. But those that did loved it, you know, and I think that now, but one thing that Sports on Earth has had an advantage of really the entire time of its existence is its advantage, that frankly, it's the same advantage that Grantland had. Page views didn't really matter that much. Like, they just didn't matter.
That's
that
the dream.
Much. Yeah. And I mean, you wanted,
because you still don't read page views, right?
I don't. And I like this time was, the site was put together specifically with that idea in mind. You wanted people to find the stuff. Obviously, the people paying for everything, which was for most of the time was half MLB and half Gannett. And then eventually at the end, it was just MLB, which I always thought maybe they should have got a little bit more credit for the fact that they were a baseball site paying for a lot of non-baseball related content for no obvious reason. I do kind of feel like at its best, you know, you didn't have to, you just trusted it was good and someone would find it. And frankly, I still think that would work. I have long argued that what happened with online content was we let people that did not care anything about whether the stuff was good or not just in the room, but allowed them to make the decisions. And look what's happened. It's made the journalism worse. It's made all those great sites go. No one's making any more money than they were before. It's just, all it's done is that you've had these people that kind of like develop their names as online content guys, and they just float from place to place, not fixing any of them, but certainly making the sites look harder to read and getting rid of a lot of quality people there. So, I think that there is a certain kind of digital specialist or digital content enterprise bullshit type of stuff that they're not a writer, they're not a creator, they're not an editor. They're literally just in there to get in the way. And we let those people take over. And that's why you get what you have now, which is – and I'm not talking about the Athletic. I think the Athletic subscription model is a very different sort of thing. But like I look at – like one of my favorite writers in the – like it's college basketball right now. Matt Norlander to me is an absolute essential college basketball writer. Like, like in a just universe, he is the Zach Lowe. Of the NBA,
yeah,
and he's just terrific. He's great about everything. He's enthusiastic. He's actually more enthusiastic than Zach is actually about. Like, he loves college basketball. He's this incredible kind of like. And to find him at CBS is difficult to really.
That site sucks. Like,
that site's horrible. It's horrible. And like his content is incredible.
Yeah.
So is Kyle Boone. So is Gary Parrish. They have a lot of really talented people there. But the site, because it's by people that like don't care about any of this stuff. They don't care about college basketball. They don't care about sports. They don't care about the readers. They literally just care about squeezing every little dime out of this thing that they can. And that's what ruined everything. We let those people in the room. I remember when I was at Deadspin, after I left, AJ DeLorio, who took over for me at Deadspin, I remember it was that I left in June. I remember that Thanksgiving he called me. I was at my then, my then fiance is now wife, at her mom's place in Georgia, and I sold in New York. And he called and he was like, man, how I because he didn't really ask my advice very much because it was his site, but he was very curious how I'd handled this one specific thing. He's like, how do you handle these ad and traffic people? And every like, they're so difficult. How do you even deal with them? All they do is just want to, they have terrible ideas and they keep bothering me about everything. And I was like, wait, I'm sorry. I don't know who those people's names are. I never dealt with those people. Why are those people even talking to you? And that's, to me, is where the switch happened. For the record, AJ was very successful at pushing those people off too. But like, that to me was remarkable. That changed. Like, I'm still from the old newspaper, the old journalism mindset. Like, I'm sorry, I make the stuff, you sell the stuff, and that's how this works. And the minute that you started merging that stuff, that's when everything started to get terrible. Like, that's literally when everything started to get terrible, when you had people in charge of content that didn't give a shit about what the content was about. And that's what happened. And until we fix that problem, they're always, that's why you get, that's why the you have all these sites that like obviously don't care about doing anything good, but are just looking at brand or engagement or all the little dumb metrics that all the people carry from one dumb internet site to the other. And no one actually cares about making good stuff anymore. That's not true. Lots of people care about making good stuff, but for some reason we've stopped listening to those people. And I would even understand a little bit if we were making more money now.
Yeah.
But we're not. No one's making more money. The industry is imploding all over the place. Like, what wisdom have they actually brought to this field?
It's just crazy that, like, Moon Crew is a thing on Substack now. And Tom Ziller, a great NBA writer that I read every day, is on Substack. And Tom Flannery, who I read his Sunday shoot-around on SB Nation. It was so well done. Every Sunday afternoon, it's one of my favorite things to read, is writing about running on his Substack. And then there's Mike Prada, who's a great NBA writer, on his Substack. And all these people, I'm like, why are, what? I hate how many different things I have to keep up and bookmark now, like the individual sites that just, it's like, how are they not writing for an outlet? Why are they not writing for CBS? Why are they not writing for The Athletic? Why are, like, what are we doing? Why are all these people scattered and having to form their own LLCs?
And it's simply because we let idiots take over all of it. Like, we are. Like, that is why. Like, and the thing that's frustrating about it, again, I cannot emphasize this enough. No one's making any more money than they used to. Like, this was not like – people always act like, oh, well, you know, it was efficient. They were probably getting paid too much for the money that they brought in. Everyone's losing more money now, trust me. Like, you have not fixed anything. All you – because I think readers quite recently have been like, wow – this site is horrible. Why? Look at this shit. I have to fight even read a basic story. You know, never minding that like they've gotten rid of the people that are most of the people that are really good at what they do. So yeah to me that is the idea that somehow. The reason, I mean, to me, before Deadspin stopped publishing content entirely. the people in charge that own that site, the whole point of Deadspin always, no matter who was in charge, was the things were run by the writers and the things were run by the creators of the stuff, not these other people who didn't actually do anything at all other than like Nick never touched Deadspin when I was there ever. And you know what? People were like, wow, this doesn't feel like it was touched by some capitalist guy just trying to hoover every dollar out of my pocket. And people, I don't think it was like, wow, this site's so brilliant. Will's so great. It's they trusted it. And like nobody trusts any sites now. And all of these – and that to me is what's so frustrating about it. This model failed. Like, it has clearly failed in every possible way. And it's failed in a way that the old sites didn't. But somehow they're like, well, somehow we've all kind of internalized this idea like, well, yeah, just can't have good, smart stuff on your side anymore. Like, yes, you can. You can definitely have that. And I guarantee you, you will make just as – like maybe you'll lose money. You're losing money now and everybody hates you. So for me – and listen, maybe the answer is to shut all the sites down. I do not believe that is true. I think that like the idea – like remember, these people, they're in charge of making money and nothing else. They don't have to do anything else. They don't have to go interview people. They don't have to write things. They don't have to go make videos. They don't have to create anything at all. Their only job is to make money, and they fail. And yet somehow we've internalized it like, oh no, they're the right ones. And it's the people making stuff that don't understand how the business works. It's gotten a little worse every year, and that's why the internet sucks now.
Yeah. Man. Well, that is a natural transition to Illinois basketball, Will.
Yeah, that's true.
They're really good. And I wonder, do you think that they have it in them to not only go to the Final Four, do you actually think that they can run the gambit, not as a fan, as a college basketball connoisseur, winning it all this spring?
I think they can. They certainly have the talent to do so. You know, they've got they're kind of like barnstorming into finish of the season. Where let's not forget, like in 1 week, they won at Wisconsin, at Michigan, blew away at Michigan, and won at Ohio State. That's one top 25 team and two top five teams, and they wiped them out. Like they were clearly the best team there. The problem with Illinois all year has been when they're on, they destroy everything in their path, but they have these stretches that they lose focus. They're a bad free throw shooting team. There's like little things that they kind of mess up a little bit, but man, they've got, you know, Io is the guy that gets all the press, and reasonably so. And Andre Curbelo is everybody's most fun guy. But, like, there really is something kind of – one of the things I like about Illinois so much, there's something kind of basic about them in that, like, they have a 7-foot-1, 300-pound dude who, like, literally never even passes out of, like, a quadruple team. He gets the ball underneath, and he tries to dunk, or he gets fouled doing so. Like, it is really remarkable to think – you want an example of how much basketball, how much the NBA has changed in the last 20 years? Like, in 1992, Kofi is Shaq. Like, he's full on Shaq. He's the number one draft pick. Everyone builds everything around him. But now he can't pass. He can run. He runs the court well, but he can't pass. He can't shoot, and his handle is not so great. That makes him probably not draftable. That's like what's changed in 20 years of the NBA. So I think that's great for Illinois, because maybe we'll get him around for an extra year. But I, as someone that loves college basketball, I love the NBA, but I've always loved – I love college basketball because there's certain – you know, the personality is so big. They're so beloved where they are. Like to not have any fans. Illinois basketball is like, you're seeing this with their, what I would argue is kind of a dumb fight with Michigan over who should win the Big Ten. Like, who cares? Go make the Final Four, and no one's going to care about any of this. And I thought it was surprising that the athletic director got involved in it. Like, I understand that emotions are high, and we're all in the middle of a pandemic, and therefore a little bit insane. But you know, it feels like, who cares? Like, for me, this is. Illinois fans are obsessive because they love college basketball. Like, it is. I living here in Athens, you know, I find the parallels between how people care about Georgia football and Illinois basketball pretty similar. But in the same way, they don't care about Illinois football or Georgia basketball. And so to see that, you know, the thing about Illinois that's really interesting is, you know, a lot of teams like Louisville and Duke have had some okay teams that have made the Final Four. There have been okay teams that made, like, there was a West Virginia team that was okay that made the Final Four. Illinois only makes the Final Four when they have these truly transcendent teams, and they have come literally to the year every 16 years. In 1989, they had Nick Anderson and Kendall Gill and Kenny Battle and Marcus Liberty and the Flying Illini. 16 years after that, they had Dee Brown and Darren Williams and that incredible team with Luther Head that should have beat North Carolina in the championship game. And literally 16 years later, they have this an unbelievably memorable team with an All-American, probably a second or third team All-American after him, a potential Freshman of the Year guy, and just a gloriously fun team. And I want to go to Illinois fans and be like, you know, sometimes you're just like a 5 seed that gets lucky. Like, we just have these like incredibly teams. This is one of those teams. I think they have the talent to do it. I think they need to hang on to a number 1 seed, because I think Gonzaga and Baylor are better than everyone. And if Illinois doesn't get a number 1 seed, they're going to get stuck with a 2 seed in their bracket. So they need to hang on to a number 1 seed. So Iowa or Ohio State has to be the team that does that. But they're really fun. And I've written this before, but my life is happier just in general when Illinois basketball is good. And the number of people that have come to me and been like, wow, how exciting is that? How fun is it to watch this Illinois team? But Illinois basketball is back. I was like, man, I've been watching every single one of these games for 15 years. I watched the Bruce Weber era fall apart. I watched John Gross start to get exciting and then have that fall apart. I saw the first two rough years of Brad Underwood's tenure. Like, I love Illinois basketball. I watch this team whether they're good or whether they're not. So to have this is what we were waiting for.
I don't have that same experience with Tennessee basketball. Well,
yeah, sorry. Well, I understand that. But good news is you have Tennessee football. Well, okay.
Tennessee baseball is great.
Tennessee baseball is
really
great.
Good.
You know, my wife went to Georgia. That's why we live down here. She hates the Tennessee colors. My wife is a designer, and she is all about color. She's very good. Check out her Instagram, Alexa Stevenson on Instagram. She's very good at what she does, but she hates the Tennessee color with the passion of a thousand.
The Gaudy orange.
Yeah, she hates it.
Okay, well, you know, that's why she's not allowed on this podcast. Well, that's why I asked for Will Leach.
She's tried to barge in a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sorry. The orange is actually perfect, and she's incorrect. How will you replace AO and Kofi next year, though? Are you concerned that this is like a one-year thing, or do you think that you have stars in waiting Illinois can be fine for the foreseeable future.
They're not going to be this. This is like kind of a magic team that's kind of coming together. But they're, I think they're a top 15 team next year. If they're a top 10, if Kofi comes back, which I think is possible. Io's not coming back, but I think Kofi could come back next year. But even if he doesn't, you know, one thing that's going to be very exciting to everyone when they start discovering Illinois basketball and watch them over the next month, Andre Curbelo is more fun. He's their freshman point guard who basically he's got a little Pistol Pete in him. He's got a little Steve Nash in him. He's got a little old Jason Williams, not shoot the guy Jason Williams and not Duke crash the motorcycle Jason Williams, but white chocolate Jason Williams. He is a purely pleasurable basketball player to watch. And he's gotten when Io got hurt, he had to take over a lot more of the duties. And he started to started to limit some of his mistakes. When you watch Illinois play for the first time, if you haven't watched them all year, you're gonna obviously know Kofi. He's a massive human. And Io, he's gonna have the mask. But Andre Curbelo, people are gonna fall in love with Andre Curbelo in this tournament. And I think him and Adam Miller are centerpieces of a pretty solid top 15 team for a year. Underwood's got something going, and this is what we were waiting to happen. This does not feel like they're not a top 5 team if Io and Kofi don't come back. But next year, I think they're a top 15 team, and I think they're top 10 if Kofi comes back.
Interesting. Last thing, and we'll wrap up here, Will. You've written a lot about return to normalcy for sports and what that's going to look like. And we talked at the top of the show about what the summer's going to look like. I don't know if you saw as we started or right before we got started that Texas Rangers are opening up full capacity.
Full capacity. Whew. Damn the torpedoes.
Yeah. But none of this is all surprising to me. Like, this was always coming, right? This felt inevitable that this was the next clash, was that some states would do this and some cities would do this and some teams would do this and not all. And then you're like, what are we doing? Why are some doing this? And like, I don't know. I was wondering about this with baseball because my guess was before, like back to December when it looked like we were going to have vaccines and this was actually going to happen in the first half of next year. I was like, oh, baseball is going to be in the middle. Like NFL got to avoid all of this by the time, like the NFL, the timing of the NFL season and everything just worked out perfectly for the NFL. And it will this year too, it looks like. I don't think that's the case with baseball. Now it's just going to be there. Going to be at the center of everything because now with the Rangers going full capacity, I would not be surprised if the Braves do. Because remember when the Braves were just like they kept showing in the ESPN broadcast, like the
chop house,
just full, full.
But technically not in the stadium, but listen, it's been weird for me, man. Like listen, you're in Tennessee, you're seeing this too. I mean, people have been in, I've wrote a piece for Medium, of confessions of a pandemic risk taker, but my risks were like, I'll eat outside.
Mm-hmm.
I will let my kid, go play baseball. But like, and my argument with that piece was that people are taking more risks than I think that like they are willing to show on social media. However, I would not eat indoors. But like you, particularly now the weather's nice here, the restaurants are packed.
Yeah.
They're absolutely packed here. So, at this point, listen, if you're going to let, we'll see if the Rangers can actually get that many fans. One of the things I thought was really interesting, the Knicks, started opening up Madison Square Garden to fans. And you went on StubHub and the tickets were like $50, which is cheaper than they were before. Like, I still think that like there's going to be more hesitance to actually pack the stadium.
Yeah.
The stadiums for people than their allowance.
Well, the one better thing is that it's outdoors. Like this like basketball. This is an outdoor thing. So I think that is going to help baseball.
I mean, Daytona 500 had like 30,000 people. Like once they had that, it's like, well, they had 30,000 people there. So if you're going to do that, then that, I cannot wait to
win in the Cup Series this year.
Yeah.
Will, I know you're a big NASCAR guy. What are you thinking?
I feel like it is a huge mistake to turn right. I would say that once they're kind of opening that up a little bit, it's only a matter of time. I'm waiting to, I've been to games. I've gone to college basketball games here.
Mm-hmm.
Now everything is very spaced out. And I've actually found it quite safe, to be entirely honest, safer than frankly, a lot of other things going on a pretty regular basis. But I wouldn't eat indoors, but I would go to a basketball game. I think that I want to see precautions taken in place, but, for a full stadium. I'll go to a baseball game, but I might wait to go to a stadium with full capacity until I'm vaccinated. But once I'm vaccinated, I'm in. I'm in.
Last thing, we'll wrap up here. You have 1 minute, Will, to gush about the St. Louis Cardinals ahead of the 2021 season.
I won't take the full minute because I'm a little worried about the rotation, a little worried about the outfield. But Nolan
what
Arenado,
helps is that your division is not competing this year.
Yes, and Nolan Arenado is on the team. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Nolan Arenado is on the team because Nolan Arenado is on the Cardinals. And if you want, I can just say that for a whole minute because that is amazing that Nolan Arenado plays for the Cardinals. It kind of blows me away that Nolan Arenado plays for the Cardinals because he does. I have his jersey already, he's definitely one of those guys that I know that I'm going to say this just because I know it annoys people, but Nolan Arenado is one of those guys that's always felt a little bit like he's going to end up a Cardinal someday. Like he really does, and it's true. And listen, Roland was like that. Goldschmidt was like that. Edmonds turned out to be
Holiday was definitely like that.
Holiday was definitely like that. Like it just there's just certain thing people that feel like fits with the franchise, and he's one of them. And we're very excited.
Well, I'm happy for you, Will.
Think I know you're not. That's okay.
I'm really happy for you. All right. Well, don't forget, folks. You can pre-order your book. How lucky? On Amazon, correct?
Yeah, Amazon on if you go to the HarperCollins page, you can pick. Some people don't like to buy stuff on Amazon, which I understand. So there's a bookshop. There's all sorts of places that you could go. But definitely you can find it on Amazon. You can find everything on it. You can buy either one of my children on Amazon.
Well, it depends. Okay, I don't know how to go with that one.
We'll just move on.
Yeah. Follow you on Twitter at William F. Leach. Keep up with all your great work across Medium, New York Magazine, and all the other places that you are writing great work. Like I said, pre-order Will's book. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas, like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter, and leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you are an iPhone user. It takes 5 seconds as you're wrapping up here. So Will would appreciate it. I would appreciate it, but Will would actually appreciate it more. He's just that kind of guy. So Will, thank you so much for the time. I greatly appreciate it. Don't be a stranger and stay safe out there.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me. Be safe.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.